You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Tuesday morning to you. Mike McNamara for a Tuesday edition. Welcome to my house. It's not, as I always say, it's not exactly my house. I am the founder of this house. So, but doesn't give me any special rights. I think that's the way we know it all works. So, good morning to you on Tuesday, All Marine Radio here, and should be a fun, interesting program. An interesting program today. Let me tell you what we're going to do. We are going to, I have a little more audio of John McCain I want to play. I was trying to find a way to, you know, the highlight of his career, obviously, is being the Democratic or the Republican nominee, in 2008. And I wanted to play, you know, parts of his speech, but, you know, it's just, it's not a very good speech. So I was watching it. It gets interrupted a bunch as people get stand up and shout, and then the audience, you know, and then it looks extremely awkward for him. He's trying to be. He was kind of, if you watch John McCain, as a senator, kind of rolled around. He was an abrasive guy with a sense of humor and an incredible sense of the purpose of the United States and the world. But he was not. He doesn't come across. That's what he is, right? So when he's campaigning, it's like he's trying to be this warm person. And I don't know that he doesn't come across, at least in his public persona, as a warm person. So you're watching him, and it just seems like a struggle. So I watched him that, and I thought, you know what? I'm not going to devote 45 minutes to an hour to this. So I'm not. So, but there was some audio I wanted to play yesterday, and I didn't play it. And so, and that was the first time, really, that John McCain ever intruded in America, and that is after he was shot down, he recorded something that is tantamount to a confession, that he bombed North Vietnam, and blah blah blah. Now, anybody who has studied the code of conduct, why we have it, anybody who studied the way people torture and break people, those kind of confessions are part of the way you survive. And anybody who hears them now, back then, maybe it wasn't so. The United States creates a code of conduct post-Korean War when 37, and Senator McCain said this yesterday, but I should call him Captain McCain, but I keep calling him Senator McCain. But anyway, he referred to 37 Americans not returning to the United States because of the brainwashing that that the North Koreans and the Chinese did in the North Korean prisoner of war system. And so the code of conduct was created, and you had more and more service members, pilots in particular, going to SEER training, right, which is survival training. So, and that was made very realistic, so they would know what to expect, so they would know how to survive, and it was tweaked and evolved based on the Vietnam experience as well. So anyway, you'll hear his first audio appearance in front of the nation. Then you'll hear his last appearance in front of the nation, which was his statement on the floor of the Senate to his colleagues. And then yesterday, a guy read a statement from Senator McCain, and you'll hear that a guy. I think it was the guy who ran his campaign. And so you'll hear his final statement before he passed away. So we'll do that, and then we'll check the news. Then we'll do that. So a brief look at the news. And there's a lot of interesting international stuff in the news today, as well as some interesting ongoing drama inside the Marine Corps. So we'll talk about that, and then you'll hear from Senator McCain in his own words. John McCain, nobody should be mourning John McCain's passing. Nobody. Why is that, Mac? Let me tell you why. He crammed as much living into his 81 years. In fact, it's his birthday tomorrow. he crammed more living into almost 82 years than just about anybody I've ever heard of on the planet. At the age of 18, he heads to the Naval Academy. And then from then on, his life is devoted to public service and much of his life in major debates in the United States over major policies that affect the world. And so John McCain has, I was reading about him yesterday. He crashes two airplanes and then gets in trouble with a third when he tries to fly under power lines in Italy, I think. And he supposedly wasn't a great pilot in his younger years. I don't know if he evolved to that. And he had a mixed reputation as a, and in his book, I think he says, I enjoyed a good reputation in neither academics nor aviation. I think he says that in his book. That's a quote, if I can recall it yesterday, and something I read. And, yeah, he crashes in two aircraft. One coming back from an Army-Navy football game after when he was stationed in Florida, and then another on approach. I want to say it was a training hop. Yeah, and he said the engine gave out. People recovered the aircraft. When they recovered it, started the engine right up. So maybe you get more chances when you're an admiral's kid. Not exactly sure how that works, but there's not too many pilots that survive a crash that investigators would say, yeah, the crash of dubious origin. Let's leave it at that. You're done. A second crash? Hello? Yeah, two. And then you flying under power lines and clipping them? All right, look, I don't know who this dude is, but, yeah, John McCain's life isn't the same if the Navy intervenes. Maybe, you know, the top cover his dad provided him. Maybe he was a fortunate son. So anyway, so we'll listen. But again, nobody should mourn him, right? I mean, so he survives two airplane crashes. He survives being that Zuni rocket and the fire on the Forrestal that could have killed him. He survives being shot down. He survives his imprisonment. I mean, he's got, that's at least one, two, three, that's at least five. That's at least five events right there. And he's only like 31, 32 years old. I also have some interesting observations that I'm going to make it right now because I think they're significant. So is that, you know, within the last year, I got very interested in, like, why, and I don't know where I saw it, but I saw the statement that 2% of Vietnam veterans that were at the Hanoi Hilton suffer from PTSD. And then I said, surely that can't be right. Upon further review, it is right. Somebody provide the footnotes to that to me. Well, I think I have the footnotes. Boom. Why is the PTSD rate so low among American service members that were shot down and were imprisoned by the North Vietnamese? You would think that would be the worst, right? So let me tell you why. They were around structure. They were older. Okay? They were professional military guys. They weren't guys who were at boot camp 6-7 months ago, went to a unit, got sent to Vietnam, and boom, they're out in the bush. They weren't young guys who were essentially novices, still learning that business, but capable enough to go to war. They weren't part of that. They were professional military guys who wanted to go to war. So I think, and they were older. So that, one, that makes a difference. Two, in the last 2 years of their imprisonment, when the North Vietnamese, and you'll hear, you heard Senator McCain, Captain McCain, damn it, talk about that yesterday, their treatment changed noticeably. Okay? They were taken out of solitary confinement. They were put together. So, and that is significant. Okay? For two reasons. That becomes, them ministering to each other, helping each other, supporting each other. Okay, now some would say that's a form of therapy in and of itself, and they would probably be correct. And so these incredible, some of them incredible, you know, leaders in that environment have a chance to get their hands on each other and talk and cope with this thing. For a significant stretch prior to their release, that bonding effect. Because McCain said he only knew one other guy before that, and that was the guy next to him in his cell. And they would tap out Morse code and communicate like that because that's the way they existed. But that's all he knew. Now his treatment was different, certainly, than others because he was the prince. The last part of it is, I talk about how significant staying connected is. right? The fact that on a daily basis, I communicate with the ass clowns, right? And I just yoked one of them up last week, okay? That bonding experience in Hanoi in the last couple of years, that final phase, right, bonded them for life. And they knew each other for life and were involved in each other's lives for life. And so I think you see all the elements of effectively coexisting with trauma. Okay? And that is, one, you're around other great people who are dealing with the same thing, and you have a relationship with them, right? And from them, you learn that this is not the end, right? That this is another part of your life, and you'll learn to deal with it as you have other parts of your life. But it's certainly not a disability. And then finally, I think, and extremely important, is that connection that you maintain with those people who had such a profound impact on your life. So to me, those are the footnotes that go with the Hanoi Hilton. I should write about that. In fact, that's the second article I've written. I need to write. The first one I need to write is post-traumatic, coexisting with trauma, post-conflict, ... It sure as fuck isn't a disability. Yeah. And then just kind of outline the basics. Okay, all right, so that's the first hour of the program, right? You're going to hear John McCain, and we'll review news. The second hour of the program, you're going to hear from a woman who works at Boulder Crest Retreat, right? Ken Falk, Josh Goldberg, Dusty, right? That whole crew, right? And they do incredible stuff. You're going to hear an interview I did with her, and on Friday. So she got involved in using horses in as just a I don't want to say therapy, because she doesn't use that word, as kind of a interactive device for people that are dealing with trauma, because you can't con a horse. A horse can sense you, right? Dogs can smell you, right? You know, everybody knows, like, dogs can smell fear. They can. He's afraid. So you'll hear her extremely interesting discussion with her today. And then the gunner's going to come on, and we're going to talk about deer rifles, because deer season's getting going in a little while. Pretty close. So, good morning to you. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio. The national anthem makes the morning official. Good morning. Dedicated to Captain John McCain, United States Navy, retired and now passed away. So the nation continues to honor him and his life of service. And again, even him honoring, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, being honored is not without its own controversy, as very much in keeping with his own life.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time. Jeremiah, you know, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Can you imagine, were you a Vietnam veteran and you came home and they told you to take your uniform off and don't talk about it and just forget about it?
I can't even imagine. I have so much respect for those guys.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day. And Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
Somebody sent me an email and said, you know, Mac, I have your opening memorized. Made me laugh. So do I. I have it memorized, too. President Kennedy he had some good speechwriters, right? In fact, John McCain referred to this.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
Yeah, but there's another Kennedy line. So, yeah, he could make a speech. He had some pretty good writers, too. Currently, sunny in 83 in Quantico. They've got some weather headed their way. clouds in 82 at Camp Lejeune. Don't often see Quantico hotter than Camp Lejeune. I said Lejeune, I misspoke, because that's how the Lejeune family says it, right? Mostly sunny in 83 in Granbury, Texas. Big Timber, Montana continues to have cool weather. Mostly cloudy and 50 right now. Tornado in Palms, Yeah, listen to this. Put it in palms. Son in 76. What? Yeah, go figure. Kent Pendleton, clouds in 67. Okinawa, cloudy, dark 81. No weather warnings. Marja in Afghanistan. The Helmand province continues to be cool. Unseasonably cool. Early evening there. 95 degrees under clear skies. At the home of Almarine Radio, Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area, beautiful Southern California. It is 68 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Love that. Because if it's 68, it means we're normally staying under 80. And we are. 79 degrees today. 82 tomorrow. 83 on Thursday. All right. Everybody needs to relax. All right. Let me... I got to do some news headlines right now. So we'll do them. And then you're going to hear John McCain, a little bit of John McCain. About... Let me see. How many minutes of John McCain today? 15... What is that? That's only about 60 seconds. That makes 16 and then 4 in his farewell. So about 20 minutes, John McCain. So I have about 14 minutes to do. I have about 14 minutes to do. General Mattis. He is giving a speech in the Pentagon briefing room right now. I assume you will replay. We like Mattis' stuff. So we will fit it in someday. Someday. Probably tomorrow. He tends not to give long speeches. So we'll take it in for consumption. He has been, you know, he is, I was thinking about this yesterday. He has made no comment about Senator McCain. So I found that a little bit curious, right? You hear things that people say, and then, you know, somebody who should say something doesn't say anything, kind of go, what? So anyway, news. This story going around since the weekend, especially since Monday. After pressure, Trump orders flags lowered to honor John McCain. Now, I'm not sure where this comes from. All right. After a day-long controversy, President Donald Trump ordered all flags at military bases and federal buildings to be flown at half staff in honor of Navy veteran and Arizona Senator John McCain. There seemed to be some confusion after flags were initially lowered on Saturday. And then were raised on Monday with groups complaining that the period of mourning was too short. The president tweeted out, "Despite our differences in policies and politics, I respect Senator John McCain's service to our country, and in his honor, I have signed a proclamation to fly the flag of the United States at half staff until the day of his interment," which I believe will be Friday. So, anyway. He also took to Twitter, the president did. And again, they were bitter rivals, right? And McCain, you know, it's interesting, and you listen to the audio of Senator McCain, and he was okay with all that. You know? He said, hey, look, I'm in the ring. You know? Take your best shot. So, after Senator McCain's death, the president tweeted out, "My deepest sympathies and respect for the family of Senator John McCain." But again, even you'll hear his statements, even in death, Senator McCain, right? He backhands the president. So, you know, you could see the president might be a little bit reluctant. So that is in the news today. It's been in the news. There's a commentary, does Got Your Six only pertain to men in the ranks? And let me tell you the problem I have with this column. It's unsigned. You know? I don't like that kind of stuff. if you're going to write and you're going to be critical, put your name on it and take what comes with it. So, and I don't know about publishing stuff like this if people won't put their name on it. And the article talks goes like this. On Instagram and Facebook, following the celebration of the 100-year anniversary of women in the Marine Corps and the announcement of the first female infantry officer, First Lieutenant Marina Hurl, degrading comments immediately appeared. Anything from women in infantry and the fact that they can wear the uniform at all. These outdated opinions are not rare. So why is anybody surprised? Okay? And as Gunnar and I have talked about, social media? Oh, my God. Was there a worse invention on the planet? Give it to me. And so in any article you read anywhere on the Internet, as soon as you get done with it, if you're dumb enough to read the comment section, all you see are the idiots among us. Is that a surprise? So to me, my issue with, first of all, the column being anonymous, and then the opinion, is this. I say on this program, what you see in the national media, That's not the United States of America. That's some slicked up Jerry Springer event for clicks. So when we see, so how big of a problem is this in the Marine Corps? And is the way you judge it, the comment section? I hope not. If that's the case, then we're doomed forever. So, bottom line, is it getting better? Has General Neller done what he says said he was going to do, which was to make it better and get after it? The column goes on. As a sergeant of Marines, I know these comments are damaging to the morale of young female Marines I lead and serve behind. Besides, the vast majority of them put their all into the Corps only to hear that they should not be there in the first place. It is not only the comments dismissing their service, but also the comments from their brothers in the same uniform wishing threats of sexual abuse, harassment, and violence against them. So we're talking about online comments of idiots. And then what we're going to do is we're going to say, this is the Marine Corps. Or we're going to say, yeah, see those stories that the worst shit that we can find in a population of, what, 230 million people? We're going to put that in a 30-minute news broadcast, and it's designed for profit, and we know you're going to click on it, and then we're going to try to sell you that that's reality in the United States. That's bullshit. All I know is that these problems, both online and off, affect Marines at every rank, and our leaders are not doing enough to stop it. Well, August 13 marks, you know what, I will tell you this, there will be those who would argue that, and I would offer the Navy up as an example of this, the Navy tilted so hard to social issues, it forgot about operations and had ships running into each other. So when somebody says they aren't doing enough to stop it, I don't know. So what's the problem? Young people come from a culture where they grow up saying what they want, ruining people, apologizing for their Twitter account years after they make comments. People go back and dig that crap up. They grow up in a culture that never says no to them. And then we're going to hold them accountable because they're not behaving the way we want. It's interesting. They're not as disciplined as we want. Takes time. Especially in the Marine Corps. 60%. 60% of the Marine Corps is under the age of 26. Think about that. So it's their first term enlistees. You're still teaching them. They're novices about what it is. In an organization where females make 7 to 9% of the ranks, they cannot stand up alone. It takes the rest of the Marines to hold the toxic members accountable, Marine to Marine. But all this shit is anonymous. Show me somebody who stands up in public and says this stuff. They get run out of the Marine Corps. We all preach we want to end the veteran suicide and that we want to stop burying our friends. If that's true, if that's truly the case, stop being complacent in the abuse and the mistreatment that directly correlates with depression and self-inflicted harm. Does the popular saying, got your six, only apply to men in our ranks? It shouldn't. And as an organization and as human beings, we must do better. We must do better than... What is okay, so here's the question. What do we do about the epidemic of anonymous comments? I say shut the comment section off on most of these publications. And if the if these publications didn't want those kind of comments, then they wouldn't allow comments because not everybody does. Right? But when you, some people will, they'll glance at the article and then they'll go down to the comments and then they'll just roll with some of the idiotic replies. Right. Iran says no third party will limit its support to Syria. Iran is struggling. If you notice that they replaced their economic minister over the weekend, they're preparing for sanctions. And one of the ways that you whip up your nation is you say that you're going to shut down the Straits of Hormuz, you show your latest fighter, and you try to distract the population with foreign issues. Okay, know this, that Barack Obama is not in the White House anymore. Donald Trump is, and Iran is in his crosshairs, as well it should be. As well it should be. Sanctions are coming back to Iran. They will hit them hard. And they're already in the streets relative to the economy. So, playing charades in Iran. Next headline. Military scientists have discovered a new malaria drug that could help eradicate the disease, and it's hitting shelves soon. How about that? The new drug is Tafinoquin. So that's the family. Crinetefol, a single-dose treatment for the cure of the Plasmodium vivax form of malaria. How about that? Erocota is a preventative malarial drug taken for the 3 days prior to travel, then weekly during the times during an area that has mosquitoes infested with the malaria parasite. So there you go. Good news on the infectious disease front. All right. Chesty the 14th retires. The beloved mascot of the United States Marine Corps, Chesty the 14th, retired at a ceremony held at Marine Barracks in Washington, D.C. on Friday after 5 years of service to the Corps. His last parade with the storied Marine Barracks will be held on Friday night for the evening parade. Dog is named after Chesty Puller. That we know. His replacement, Chesty the 15th, was announced in late March. Dog's a puppy. The young bulldog puppy recruit has since graduated from recruit training and will take the helm as the Corps' new mascot on Saturday, according to the barracks in Washington. English bulldogs have participated in the Marine Corps evening parade since 1957. How about that? Top five stories in Early Bird, and then you're going to hear Senator McCain. Number one, I cannot believe this is still going on, and it's incredible to me. Reuters story, U.S. Army forms plan to test 40,000 homes for lead following a Reuters report. The U.S. Army has drafted a plan to test for toxic lead levels at 40,000 homes on its bases, according to military documents. In a sweeping response to a Reuters report that found children at risk of lead poisoning in military housing. You can read this special report here. It's just amazing. Just amazing that, again, and this has been going on since the Camp Lejeune water thing. Like, lead and the things that harm human beings, in particular young people, that wasn't eliminated? Are you kidding me? Are you absolutely positively kidding me? That's horrible. All right, next headline. The homeland is no longer a sanctuary amid rising near-peer threats, and that from the NORTHCOM commander. From New Orleans, the U.S. homeland is no longer a sanctuary. Air Force General Terrence O'Shaughnessy, nice Irish name, right, ended a speech at the 140th National Guard Association Conference in New Orleans this weekend with a warning that the era of great power competition doesn't leave the U.S. mainland uncontested. And I think we all know, right, from missile launches to cyber warfare. Another interesting story is the rift grows between U.S. allies over North Korea nuclear threat. Less than 3 months after shaking Kim's hand in Singapore, U.S. President Donald Trump is confronting an increasingly fractured diplomatic landscape between two key allies, Japan and South Korea, pursuing different ends of his two-pronged North Korea strategy. In Tokyo, Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's government reaffirmed Tuesday that North Korea posed a grave and imminent threat to Japan, despite Kim's pledge of denuclearization. Meanwhile, in Seoul, President Moon Jae-in is taking steps to upgrade ties with Kim, establishing a liaison office over the border that, according to U.S. officials, could violate sanctions. So, North Korea, South Korea looks like the little brother that's begging to have something done. Iran and Syria signed a deal for military cooperation. That's the fifth story in the early bird. All right, we're going to take a real quick break, and when we come back, you're going to hear, maybe we won't take a break at all. Yeah. How about if we don't take a break so I can stay on time? All right, the first piece of audio you're going to hear is the, and this is under the heading of Captain John McCain, United States Navy, retired. I didn't play this yesterday, but this was, I don't think I did. Maybe I did.
Without even an aspirin for the pain.
What is your name? Lieutenant Commander John McCain.
So this is his interview as he's laying on a bed, no shirt on. It looks like he's in some form of body cast. All right, so this is the first American saw of him.
Hey, how many raids have you done until the last one? 23? In which circumstances have you been shot down? I was on a flight over the city of Hanoi, and I was bombing. It was hit by either missile or any aircraft fire. I'm not sure which. And the plane continued straight down. And I ejected and broke my leg and both arms and went into a lake, parachuted into a lake. And I was picked up by some North Vietnamese and taken to the hospital where I almost died. I would just like to tell what I will get well. I love her.
Yes. So that was the first people heard of John McCain. The next thing they heard is something that you heard yesterday, and that was the his quote unquote confession. And again, John McCain, they wanted him to become more than he was as a prisoner of war, being the son of the admiral who ran the Pacific Command for the United States, his father. So and he refused it. And so again, people can quarrel with Senator McCain's record politically, but these are the facts of his life. The final time he dressed he stood on the floor of the Senate, you'll hear right now. And again, what strikes me about this is that they can stand up and profess all they want about how much they love and respect John McCain, right? The bottom line is, just like when we saw, you know, Steve Scalia shot, it will not change anybody's behavior. And it's, in my opinion, it's absolutely a horrible legacy of Washington, D.C. and what it is today. And our Congress ought to be embarrassed the way they act. So listen to his words. We've all watched their actions. They speak for themselves.
Your senator from Arizona is recognized.
I thank you, Mr. President. I've stood in this place many times and addressed as president many presiding officers. I've been so addressed when I've sat in that chair, and that's as close as I'll ever be to a presidency. But anyway, it's an honorific we're almost indifferent to, isn't it? In truth, presiding over the Senate can be a nuisance, a bit of ceremonial bore, and it is usually relegated to the more junior members of the majority. But I stand here today, looking a little worse for wear, I'm sure. I have a refreshed appreciation for the protocols and customs of this body and for the other 99 privileged souls who have been elected to this Senate. I've been a member of the United States Senate for 30 years. I had another long, if not as long, career before I arrived here. Another profession that was profoundly rewarding, and in which I had experiences and friendships that I revere. But make no mistake, my service here is the most important job I've had in my life. And I'm so grateful to the people of Arizona for the privilege, for the honor of serving here, and the opportunities it gives me to play a small role in the history of the country that I love. I've known and admired men and women in the Senate who played much more than a small role in our history, true statesmen, giants of American politics. They come from both parties and from various backgrounds. Their ambitions were frequently in conflict. They held different views on the issues of the day, and they often had very serious disagreements about how best to serve the national interest. But they knew that however sharp and heartfelt their disputes, however keen their ambitions, they had an obligation to work collaboratively to ensure the Senate discharged its constitutional responsibilities effectively. Our responsibilities are important, vitally important to the continued success of our republic. And our arcane rules and customs are deliberately intended to require broad cooperation to function well at all. The most revered members of this institution accepted the necessity of compromise in order to make incremental progress on solving America's problems and defend her from her adversaries. That principled mindset and the service of our predecessors who possessed it come to mind when I hear the Senate referred to as the world's greatest deliberative body. I'm not sure we can claim that distinction with a straight face today. I'm sure it wasn't always deserved in previous eras either. But I'm sure there have been times when it was, and I was privileged to witness some of those occasions. Our deliberations today, not just our debates, but the exercise of all of our responsibilities, authorizing government policies, appropriating the funds to implement them, exercising our advice and consent role, are often lively and interesting. They can be sincere and principled, but they are more partisan, more tribal, more of the time than at any time that I can remember. Our deliberations can still be important and useful, but I think we'd all agree they haven't been overburdened by greatness lately. And right now, they aren't producing much for the American people. Both sides have let this happen. Let's leave the history of who shot first to the historians. I suspect they'll find we all conspired in our decline, either by deliberate actions or neglect. We've all played some role in it. Certainly I have. Sometimes I've let my passion rule my reason. Sometimes I made it harder to find common ground because of something harsh I said to a colleague. Sometimes I wanted to win more for the sake of winning than to achieve a contested policy. Incremental progress, compromises that each side criticize but also accept, just plain muddling through to chip away at problems and keep our enemies from doing their worst, isn't glamorous or exciting. It doesn't feel like a political triumph, but it's usually the most we can expect from our system of government, operating in a country as diverse and quarrelsome and free as ours. Considering the injustice and cruelties inflicted by autocratic governments and how corruptible human nature can be, the problem solving our system does make possible, the fitful progress it produces, and the liberty and justice it preserves is a magnificent achievement. Our system.
I hesitate to hop in here, but how can you say you respect him and then conduct business the way they conduct it? In my opinion, when you look at, in particular, the United States Senate, it is a soulless organization. It is a burn-it-down and cutthroat organization. And we see it play out every day. And you can say what you want about John McCain's words, but they will live up to not one iota of this.
It doesn't depend on our nobility. It accounts for our imperfections and gives us an order to our individual strivings that has helped make ours the most powerful and prosperous society on earth. It is our responsibility to preserve that, and even when it requires us to do something less satisfying than winning. Even when we must give a little to get a little. Even when our efforts manage just 3 yards in a cloud of dust while critics on both sides denounce us for timidity, for our failure to triumph. I hope we can again rely on humility, on our need to cooperate, on our dependence on each other, to learn how to trust each other again, and by so doing better, serve the people who elected us. Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them. They don't want anything done for the public good. Our incapacity is their livelihood. Let's trust each other. Let's return to regular order. We've been spinning our wheels on too many important issues because we keep trying to find a way to win without help from across the aisle. That's an approach that's been employed by both sides, mandating legislation from the top down without any support from the other side, with all the parliamentary maneuvers that requires. We're getting nothing done, my friends. We're getting nothing done. And all we've really done this year is confirm Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. Our health care insurance system is a mess. We all know it. Those who support Obamacare and those who oppose it. Something has to be done. We Republicans have looked for a way to end it and replace it with something else without paying a terrible political price. We haven't found it yet, and I'm not sure we will. All we've managed to do is make more popular a policy that wasn't very popular when we started trying to get rid of it. I voted for the motion to proceed to allow debate to continue and amendments to be offered. I will not vote for this bill as it is today. It's a shell of a bill right now. We all know that. I have changes urged by my state's governor that will have to be included to earn my support for final passage of any bill. I know many of you will have to see the bill changed substantially for you to support it. We tried to do this by coming up with a proposal behind closed doors in consultation with the administration, then springing it on skeptical members, trying to convince them that it's better than nothing. That it's better than nothing? Asking us to swallow our doubts and force it past a unified opposition. I don't think that's going to work in the end, and probably shouldn't. The administration and congressional Democrats shouldn't have forced through Congress without any opposition support a social and economic change as massive as Obamacare. And we shouldn't do the same with ours. Why don't we try the old way of legislating in the Senate? The way our rules and customs encourage us to act. If this process ends in failure, which seems likely, then let's return to regular order. Let the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee under Chairman Alexander and Ranking Member Murray hold hearings. Try to report a bill out of committee with contributions from both sides. Something that my dear friends on the other side of the aisle didn't allow to happen 9 years ago. Let's see if we can pass something that will be imperfect, full of compromises, and not very pleasing to implacable partisans on either side, but that might provide workable solutions to problems Americans are struggling with today. What have we to lose by trying to work together to find those solutions? We're not getting done much apart. I don't think any of us feels very proud of our incapacity. Merely preventing your political opponents from doing what they want isn't the most inspiring work. There's greater satisfaction in respecting our differences, but not letting them prevent agreements that don't require abandonment of core principles. Agreements made in good faith that help improve lives and protect the American people. The Senate is capable of that. We know that. We've seen it before. I've seen it happen many times, and the times when I was involved, even in a modest way, with working on a bipartisan response to a national problem or threat, are the proudest moments of my career and by far the most satisfying. This place is important. The work we do is important. Our strange rules and seemingly eccentric practices that slow our proceedings and insist on our cooperation are important. Our founders envisioned the Senate as the more deliberative, careful body that operates at a greater distance than the other body from the public passions of the hour. We are an important check on the powers of the executive. Our consent is necessary for the president to appoint jurists and powerful government officials and, in many respects, to conduct foreign policy. Whether or not we are of the same party, we are not the president's subordinates. We are his equal. As his responsibilities are onerous, many and powerful, so are ours. We play a vital role in shaping and directing the judiciary, the military, and the cabinet in planning and supporting foreign and domestic policies. Our success in meeting all these awesome constitutional obligations depends upon cooperation among ourselves. The success of the Senate is important to the continued success of America. This country, this big, boisterous, brawling, intemperate, restless, striving, daring, beautiful, bountiful, brave, good, and magnificent country needs us to help it thrive. That responsibility is more important than any of our personal interests or political affiliation. We are the servants of a great nation, a nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. More people have lived free and prosperous lives here than in any other nation. We've acquired unprecedented wealth and power because of our governing principles and because our government defended those principles. America has made a greater contribution than any other nation to an international order that has liberated more people from tyranny and poverty than ever before in history. We have been the greatest example, the greatest supporter, and the greatest defender of that order. We aren't afraid. We don't covet other people's land and wealth. We don't hide behind walls. We breach them. We are a blessing to humanity. What greater cause could we hope to serve than helping keep America the strong, aspiring, inspirational beacon of liberty and defender of the dignity of all human beings and their right to freedom and equal justice? That is the cause that binds us and is so much more powerful and worthy than the small differences that divide us. What a great honor and extraordinary opportunity it is to serve in this body. It's a privilege to serve with all of you. I mean it. Many of you have reached out in the last few days with your concern and your prayers. And it means a lot to me. It really does. I've had so many people say such nice things about me recently that I think some of you must have me confused with someone else. I appreciate it, though, every word, even if much of it isn't deserved. I'll be here for a few days. I hope managing the floor debate on the defense authorization bill, which I'm proud to say is again a product of bipartisan cooperation and trust among the members of the Senate Armed Services Committee. After that, I'm going home for a while to treat my illness. I have every intention of returning here and giving many of you cause to regret all the nice things you said about me. And I hope to impress on you again that it is an honor to serve the American people in your company. Thank you, fellow senators. Mr. President, I yield the floor.
You know, my thought is that they should play that before they begin to conduct business every day. That senators ought to be forced to look at that every day. Because they're failing. This is his former campaign manager who read his final letter, the final thing we heard from John McCain. So you heard his first statements after he was captured. Then you heard his final words on the floor of the Senate. You'll now hear his final letter to the American people.
My fellow Americans, whom I have gratefully served for 60 years, and especially my fellow Arizonians, thank you for the privilege of serving you and for the rewarding life that service in uniform and in public office has allowed me to lead. I've tried to serve our country honorably. I've made mistakes, but I hope my love for America will be weighed favorably against them. I've often observed that I am the luckiest person on earth. I feel that way even now as I prepare for the end of my life. I've loved my life, all of it. I've had experiences, adventures, friendships, enough for 10 satisfying lives, and I am so thankful. Like most people, I have regrets, but I would not trade a day of my life in good or bad times for the best day of anybody else's. I owe the satisfaction to the love of my family. One man has never had a more loving wife or children he was prouder of than I am of mine. And I owe it to America to be connected to America's causes, liberty, equal justice, respect for the dignity of all people, brings happiness more sublime than life's fleeting pleasures. Our identities and sense of worth are not circumscribed, but are enlarged by serving good causes bigger than ourselves. Fellow Americans, that association has meant more to me than any other. I lived and died a proud American. We are citizens of the world's greatest republic, a nation of ideals, not blood and soil. We are a blessing to humanity when we uphold and advance those ideals at home and in the world. We have helped liberate more people from tyranny and poverty than ever before in history, and we have acquired great wealth and power in the progress. We weaken our greatness when we confuse our patriotism with tribal rivalries that have sown resentment and hatred and violence in all the corners of the globe. We weaken it when we hide behind walls rather than tear them down, when we doubt the power of our ideals rather than trust them to be the great force for change they have always been. We are 325 million opinionated, vociferous individuals. We argue and compete and sometimes even vilify each other in our raucous public debates. But we have always had so much more in common with each other than in disagreement. If only we remember that and give each other the benefit of the presumption that we all love our country, we will get through these challenging times. We will come through them stronger than before. We always do. 10 years ago, I had the privilege to concede defeat in the election for president. I want to end my farewell to you with heartfelt faith in Americans that I felt so powerfully that evening. I feel it powerfully still. Do not despair of our present difficulties. We believe always in the promise and greatness of America, because nothing is inevitable here. Americans never quit. We never surrender. We never hide from history. We make history. Farewell, fellow Americans. God bless you, and God bless America.
John McCain's final statement to the American people. We should celebrate his life. He crammed a ton of living in it. And, you know, there's also not that many people that get to go out and say exactly the things that they feel on their way out the door. A lot of people get taken very quickly. A lot of people get taken tragically. What a life. What a life. And who've worn the uniform, proud to be fellow veterans, those of us in the Naval Service, proud to consider him closer to us than anybody else. And so fair winds and following seas to John McCain. But I think his own words, extremely powerful. I don't know how in the Senate you get up and look yourself in the face and say, I'm doing a good job, if you don't return to what he calls regular order. That is the way we've done business. And he's right. What's changed in this country? The media's changed this country. The media has skewed to Jerry Springer to the detriment of all of us. And even today, big column in Marine Corps Times about does I've got your back mean include women too? So the basis of it is comments and anonymous shit that people write? If that's the measure of your culture, then God help us. We'll take a quick break. Susie Landolfi is going to join us next. We're going to talk about post-traumatic stress, use of horses, and trying to help people learn to coexist. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.